Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Well, hey there, everybody. I am Andrew Langer, in for Tony Katz today, in for Tony Katz tomorrow. He will be returning from Israel in just a couple of days. So glad that I could fill in for him and join all of you. By the way, you all know that I, in addition to doing my radio work, I do a couple of podcasts. Andrew and Jerry Save the World with my colleague Jerry Rogers. I do a podcast for CPAC called Swamp Secrets, Exposing Regulatory Dark Matter. And I do a podcast for the Federal Newswire called The Lunch Hour. Great shows, all of them. A new episode of The Lunch Hour dropped on Monday. I talked with Tim Lee from the Center for Individual Freedom. Bonus episodes of Andrew and Jerry Save the World dropped today because Jerry's doing radio. I'm doing radio. I interview Doug Collins from Georgia. John Schweppe, who we're going to be hearing from in a couple of minutes, I interviewed him as well on this bonus episode. So go and check that out, Andrew and Jerry Save the World. A couple of minutes going to be joined by Jim Edwards from Conservatives for Property Rights. And then later on, John Schweppe, as I said. We got Mel Kay talking, joining us in a little while. And then Andre Iancu is also going to join us as well. So listen, had Tony been with us today, we would have been continued to talk about his trip. It's been a further eye-opening trip for him. I know it's going to stay with him for the rest of his life. In fact, I'm a little envious about this opportunity he's had. So he was just over there. Obviously, lots of stuff happening here at home. And I want to start here with something that happened at the UN in Geneva. The Palestinian Rabbi, we've heard a lot about this, about Jesus and about what Jesus would do, blah, 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 blah. By the way, when I talk about Palestinians, I refer to them as so-called Palestinians because there really is no such thing as a Palestinian. There was never a Palestinian state. It's an invention of the Middle East, of Arab nations who wanted to see Israel destroyed. There are a people who call themselves Palestinians. But they've never had a true homeland in the same sense. There was the Mandate of Palestine, which was a British creation. There was Judea historically. In any case, there was the Ottoman Empire. In any case, there has never been a nation called Palestine. So I call them so-called Palestinians. It's a political invention. So the representative of the so-called Palestinians in Geneva, well, she decided to invoke the name of Jesus. And let's see if we can figure out what the massive flaw in her logic is. Let's play cut number 18.
Should not happen. Jesus was born in Palestine. And if Jesus were alive, he would cry his soul out due to the killing of the children in the land where he was born. And I thank you.
So if you didn't understand what she said, first she says Jesus was born in Palestine. No. Jesus was born in Judea, not in Palestine, the Roman state of Judea, which is the nation of the Jews. Let's be really clear about something. Jesus was Jewish. He was born a Jew. He lived his life as a Jew. It was only after his death that this sect became known as the Christians. They were Jewish followers of Christ, and this separate religion was born. And there are lots of reasons for it. I don't mean to oversimplify the birth of Christianity. But let's be really clear about something. As Jesus lived, he lived his life as a Jew. If he were born today, he would be born as a Jew. And if he were born in Judea as a Jew, this woman, this so-called Palestinian, she and her ilk would be attempting to exterminate him from the face of the earth. Now, Jesus may have turned the other cheek, right? He may have advocated for peace. That's fine. That's who he was. Peace on earth and goodwill towards men. He might very well have been weeping as to what was happening with civilians in Gaza who are dying because they cannot escape from the clutches of Hamas. I'm sure he would be. Of course, you remember that Jesus also said, in terms of governance, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God's. But make no mistake about it. This woman and her ilk would have been doing what they can to hunt down and exterminate Jesus from the face of the earth. So to sit here and try to hide under his blessing and to try to shame people, it is a form of insanity, of gaslighting. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about gaslighting today. Now, yesterday when Tony joined us, we were talking about this meeting that Benny Gantz had with the Vice President of the United States and why that came about. And Tony said something really interesting yesterday, which was that in the end, the White House decided to meet, or the Vice President's office decided to meet with Benny Gantz so that she could continue to engage in her horrific rhetoric on this, on the situation in Gaza. Essentially selling out the Israeli position in all of this. And I think that's very, very accurate. Obviously, you know, Tony's there. He's seeing what's been happening. He's got a great sense of all of these things. So John Kirby held a press conference yesterday, or was the star attraction of a press conference yesterday. He was asked about this meeting between Vice President Kamala Harris and Benny Gantz, a former Netanyahu aide, now turned Netanyahu critic. Let's play cut number 14.
In Israel, the vice president's meeting with Gantz was seen as a snub for the Netanyahu government, was it?
The meeting with Minister Gantz, again, was at his request. He is a member of the war cabinet. There is a war going on, and we believed it was a good opportunity to have a discussion with the war cabinet about the way in which we're supporting Israel and the things that we want to see Israel do.
He doesn't get it to the heart of the question, which is to talk about whether or not this is a snub of the Netanyahu government, which I believe it most certainly was, and a convenient one at that. But then there is this recognition amongst the press corps that perhaps Harris's rhetoric is a little bit out of step with where America ought to be in all of this, taking this very pro-Palestinian position here. Let's play cut number 15.
And on the vice president, there were reports that the National Security Council had asked her to, quote, tone down her speech on Sunday. What can you say about that?
I would point you to what the vice president's spokesperson already said about that story in calling it inaccurate.
So it's inaccurate. So does this mean that she's not going to moderate her rhetoric, that we're going to continue to send mixed messages? I would suspect so. And here's why. Again, it gets to what Tony said yesterday. This administration benefits from mixed messages because on the one hand, the president can continue to remain staunchly pro-Israel, as he should. And let's not forget that even as pro-Israel as he is, had he been taking the steps to make sure that Israel's enemies could not receive the financial support that they're receiving, we wouldn't be in this mess globally, in the same way that if he had taken steps not to give aid and comfort to Russia when he became president, maybe Russia wouldn't have felt like they could go ahead and invade Ukraine. But by the same token, the vice president can continue to be trotted out to assuage the anti-Israel corners in places like Michigan, where they desperately need votes, in Minnesota, where they desperately need votes. This is where the rubber hits the road in terms of the disgusting nature of politics now. Y'all know that property rights are very near and dear to my heart. When we return, we're going to be joined by Jim Edwards, my friend Jim Edwards. He's the executive director of Conservatives for Property Rights. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. So when I came on board at CPAC back over the summer, one of my colleagues reintroduced me to one of my favorite organizations that's out there, an organization very near and dear to my heart, The Conservatives for Property Rights and their director, Jim Edwards. Jim does great work. He's been doing great work on property rights issues for a long time, and they're very varied, especially in an era in which you have an administration that is fundamentally antithetical to the concept. So antithetical to the concept of property rights that former Obama administration officials are shocked at this. Jim, are you shocked that when you got folks Obama's former head of the Patent and Trademark Office, David Kapos, coming out and saying, yeah, what they're doing is a little extreme. I take some solace in that. Do you?
Well, first, Andrew, thank you for having me on the show. And the answer is yes. It is interesting and encouraging, in fact, that the former Obama administration officials, not only PTO directors, but other parts of the of the administration have been on several letters over the past 3 years, joint letters where they're filing concerns about various actions that the Biden administration is taking on these fronts. And the ones I'm most familiar with are probably in the intellectual property area, but also I'm sure there are other areas where their similar colleagues are weighing in as well.
Well, I was fortunate enough to have a long conversation with David Kapos last week, which is why it's very much on my mind. We're actually going to be joined by Andre Lanku later on, to talk about this as well. No, it's Lanku. But let's why don't you tee it up? Because I just did a panel on this at CPAC on the issue of buy Dole and march in. Or are there other things that are happening with this that I'm not aware of? Talk about the attacks on intellectual property from the Biden administration.
Well, one in particular you mentioned is the Buy Dole Act, and it's a very broad set of guidance, not even a rulemaking, out of the National Institute of Standards and Technology. This has been in the works or attempted by those who wish to use Buy Dole's march-in provisions. And I'll get to explain that in just a second.
Yeah.
To serve as a price control on a resulting product. So, before Buy Dole, the government had funded research and owned like 28,000 patents, and less than 5% were attempted to be commercialized. That's because the government held control over the patents.
Right.
The Buy Dole Act did in 1980 was democratized control over the inventions and the patents that come out of federal research grants. This would be like university basic research grants where you determine that, yeah, this particular molecule corresponds with certain disease, and so we could conceivably come up with a diagnostic test that relates these two. And so the university will get that patented, and then their tech transfer office, which has been in and of itself a sector that's grown that didn't exist before Buy Dole, and they transfer the technology or basically find someone to marry up the
right
patent and invention to commercialize it.
Well, it's one of those things, as I pointed out with David, really, Hernando de Soto, who was the founder and president of the Institute for Liberty and Democracy, this is what he talks about in his book, The Mystery of Capital, that property rights, including intellectual property rights, do two things in a society, right? They promote political stability as well as economic prosperity because they allow folks to invest in themselves and their own future, right? It's this idea enshrined in Supreme Court case law in the United States, you know, this concept of reasonable investment-backed expectations. If you have no expectation of any kind of a return, why would you bother investing on it? This is what we're talking about here, aren't we?
That's exactly right. And right. And your point is essentially that clear title.
Yes.
Title to the property. And in CPR, Conservatives for Property Rights case, our purpose is to say clear title ownership is is important, and that is in regard to every form of property, whether it's
yes.
land, whether it's financial resources, whether it's personal property like your car or your house, all of those things, but including your intellectual property, those things that you come up with and work out, whether it be a book or a movie or a photograph or a song or an invention.
Yes.
So it's clear title that's at risk in trying to write guidance that allows all segments of the government to take into consideration the ultimate product's price in the market. And you're talking about a product that only comes after many years normally of
right.
of private investment to turn that invention into a product.
Good.
It's not an easy step. It's usually quite risky, and a lot of their calculated risks of losing their investment because it doesn't work out.
Sure.
And that's not uncommon.
Jim,
so
let me.
That's the problem.
Let me, because we're going to bring on Andre Iancu later on in the show. I want to give you this opportunity. Talk about some of the other things that the Conservatives for Property Rights Coalition is dealing with, other threats to property rights by the Biden administration.
Well, there's the Patent Trial and Appeal Board is something that Andre Iancu under the Trump administration. Tried to rein in. It's an administrative adjudicatory body that hears patent challenges to patent validity. And so this normally would have taken place only in federal courts, like all other property issues. But now this is whether a patent is valid or not is
sure.
now determined by a bunch of unelected bureaucrats. At the Patent Office. And so the PTAB, they call it, Patent Trial and Appeal Board, is something that this administration has undone some of the stuff that Mr. Iancu put into place that helped to bring some sense and a little bit of constraint to the ability of the what I call the infringers lobby, which is basically big tech entities and the implementers, though, who don't make patents and inventions, they use other people's in patents and inventions, and Chinese companies like Huawei. So they get to have multiple bites at the apple at PTAB to try to invalidate the patent. The only thing that the patent owner gets out of that prospect is to keep his patent, or at least some of it.
Wow.
That's left after the repeated bites of the apple through their proceedings. That's one of the big things, is the lack of constraint there.
Sure. And I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say, and more generally, 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, President Biden in 2021 put forth an executive order that weaponized antitrust. So it said, let's make everything, quote unquote, competitive
oh, yeah.
in terms of how we assess things. What that means is it's not friendly to ownership of property. It's more in every respect. All parts of the government looking at how they can control different aspects of innovation. And that includes things like drug patents,
right.
FDA, all other patents in the PTO. The Department of Justice put forth some rules, and thankfully it was soundly, and that's in one of those instances where there were, bipartisan former administration executives who
pushed back,
came together, and yes, exactly, pushed back.
Jim, I got to leave it there. How do folks find out more about the good work that Conservatives for Property Rights is doing?
on X, you can go to @number4propertyrights, or you can go to property dash.
There you go. Jim, unfortunately, I'll do it later on. This is Tony Katz Today.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Andrew Langer in for Tony Katz today. And, you know, as I've been talking about over the last week, I may have mentioned the term whole of government approach. In fact, I know I've mentioned this because I know in talking yesterday about this effort, alleged effort by the VA to get rid of the iconic photograph, the kiss in Times Square, on VJ Day of 1945, as part of this effort to undo history and erase history. I know I talked about the issue of religious freedom and the attacks on religious freedom. Joining me right now is John Schweppe with the he's the policy director for the American Principles Project. And John, you know, it's one of those things when Ellen, your colleague, emailed me to, well, let me know you were coming on, and she starts talking about what the Department of Education was doing. I was like, I'm following this, because whether it's the Department of Education attacking Christian universities, which you're going to talk about, or whether going after doctors who don't want to perform abortions as a matter of conscience, or whether it is the DOJ harassing pro-life protesters who protest near abortion clinics, or my favorite one that I've talked about on these airwaves, the National Park Service going after the statue of William Penn, one of the great champions of religious freedom in America. This is the whole of government approach. This administration hates religious freedom. They hate people of faith. And so they're going to attack them by any means necessary. I think you would agree with me. Let's talk about what the latest is at the Department of Education.
No, I really like the way you're framing that. I think that's totally right, because obviously you have a top-down approach of, you know, Biden directing or these agency heads directing. But then you also have the administrative state, which kind of knows how to act, right? It's progressive by its very nature. It knows who its domestic enemies are, and so it kind of naturally persecutes them. And look, this is what's actually happening. I mean, we know this. We saw, you know, the Biden administration weaponize the government against parents protesting school board meetings. You know, they've passed rules at HHS to go after parents who object to gender ideology and transing their kids. And now, you know, what we're seeing is this effort to go after, for the Department of Education to go after these colleges, Christian colleges, and they're trying to get them with ticky-tack fines, right?
Yes.
So, you know, one of the examples is Liberty University. Liberty had a couple, I guess, sexual assaults or on campus or what have you, and DOE came down with a eight-figure fine on that. Meanwhile, you know, you see the two-tiered standard of justice here. Larry Nassar, the doctor who's involved in covering up all of that in Michigan State, I think Michigan State got like a $4.5 million fine. And so you hear what you have with Grand Canyon University, based out of Arizona. You know, this is a school that tries to make college affordable for a lot of folks who probably otherwise couldn't attend. And they do great work. And the administration hates their business model. They hate that it's a for-profit school. They hate that they're competing with the higher education cartel, right? They want to prevent that type of competition. And certainly they hate that they're a Christian institution that refuses to bend the knee to cultural Marxism. And so you have all of this, and, you know, basically what they're doing, they're levying this $37.7 million fine.
Wow.
It's historic. They've never levied any fine like that before. And, you know, and it's over, you know, where there's no victim, right? Ultimately, you know, folks who have attended GCU appreciate it. They, you know, we were able to get a cheap education. They were able to get that credential needed to help them, you know, get ahead. And but the Biden administration hates this, and they want to, you know, send these types of schools out of business.
And they want to do it for a lot of reasons, right? Not just because they are bucking the narrative, right, and producing kids that are not coming out of the traditional Ivy League mills. But it's, you know, it's the fact that they're, well, I mean, I guess maybe it does come down to that. I mean, you know, on one elemental level, They hate faith and they hate people of faith. They hate these institutions, unless they can use them, right? Unless they're institutions that can be used to sort of promote the prevailing power structure. But on the other hand, it's also, it's the same reason why they hate homeschoolers and they hate, you know, homeschooling organizations, and they want to support homeschoolers because, again, that was good. I got so animated, I knocked the microphone out of its stand there. Anyway, but that's my point, right? Is that in the end, it doesn't fit not just their ideological goals, but their goals also of indoctrination down the road.
Yeah, and the homeschool thing is a great comparison, because think about it. Now they're really animated about this. You're starting to see articles in the New York Times about how homeschool is, you know, a threat, that these parents are a threat. Why is that happening? Because after COVID, lots of parents flock towards homeschool as a better option. And what does that do? It disrupts their monopoly over public schooling.
Right.
And that's what's happening here at these colleges. You know, I do think part of it is persecution because they're Christian, but I do think probably an even bigger part of it is that they pose a competitive threat. And, you know, ultimately folks are going to say, well, I could go for $65,000 a year to this liberal arts college, or I could go online and go to a college that's more aligned with me and, you know, get the same degree. So why not consider that? And I think you're going to see more and more of that. The Biden administration protecting their indoctrination centers, their industries that favor them, all of that, because they don't want that competition.
You know, you're right. It's a situation in which, you know, they used to be able to say, well, if they're homeschooled, at the very least, when they come out of homeschooled, if they're going to go off to college, they got to come into one of our colleges, and our colleges are so chock-a-block, you know, overstuffed, full of, you know, leftist quote-unquote thinkers, that they will at least get some measure of indoctrination into our values, and we can continue to tear at the fabric of American society. But now there are these they can either go to a school that is Christian oriented or faith oriented in some way, shape, or form, or they can go to a school where they don't have to deal with any of the other frippery and just focus on their degrees, and they don't like that. John, let me ask you this. We're talking with John Schweppe. He's the director of policy for American Principles Project. Talk about APP more generally. What all are you guys up to?
Well, we're focused on, you know, obviously where the Biden administration is overreaching. That's a big part of it. But we're also going on offense. And so we've been big in the states on protecting kids, you know, protecting women's sports, protecting kids from sex changes, trying to implement age verification rules for online porn sites. And so that's been our big focus. You know, I really think conservatives are good at playing defense. This is kind of the Mitch McConnell thing, whether you like his legacy or not.
Sure.
If you like defense, I mean, yeah, he's been great. But, you know, I think part of the problem is that the allegation that conservatism is just progressivism driving the speed limit, I think groups like American Principles Project are really helpful in trying to show how we can go on offense, how we can win in politics by engaging in campaigns and elections, and then going out there and trying to articulate what our vision for America is. And we've been really, you know, having a good couple of years on that front, I think.
Well, and you guys are doing great work. How do folks get involved if they want to push back on what the now? Obviously, lawsuits we can't weigh in on, but on these other things, you know, when they do a rulemaking, when the Department of Interior, when the National Park Service says we're going to remove the statue of William Penn, how do folks get involved in that with your organization?
Well, first of all, I think these folks need to, apart from our organization, call the offending parties, right? You know, we found that when you have a legislator that does something stupid and you send thousands of calls to their office,
right,
you know, it often does have an effect. And so I think that's, you know, our activists that are listening, you know, I think that's number one is, you know, when you hear about this type of thing, make sure you're writing emails, make sure you're making phone calls. That's helpful. But the second thing, and I think we have to recognize this, you know, we're up against a movement that's totally ideological and they don't really care what we think. Right?
Right.
I mean, ultimately, they are willing to do it without popular support. And so we have to go out there and win campaigns and elections. And that's a big part of what we do at APP. We envision ourselves as the NRA for the family, which means we spend in campaigns. We go out there and help these pro-family candidates win so we can actually achieve policy victories. So, you know, if you're looking to get involved with us, you know, I'd encourage folks to sign up on our website, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. Get on our list. You know, we send out action alerts. And then also, you know, we will be spending quite a bit in the election, and, you know, we're always happy to work with folks and do what we can do.
Well, I appreciate that. John Schweppe, you take care. Best of luck to you, good sir.
Hey, thanks so much.
That was John Schweppe from the American Principles Project. Go and check them out. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. So, yeah, I'm going to talk more about this whole of government approach situation in light of what happened yesterday. It's all connected. And there is, you know, something, there is a great deal of gaslighting that is going on here. I mean, I know you all are familiar with the term. Just to explain, gaslighting, it comes from a film called Gaslight, in which a husband slowly drives his wife crazy by changing little things around the house. And telling her that nothing is changing. That's what it is. It's essentially a way of someone, you are noticing what is going on in the world and people around you essentially telling you, making you crazy by telling you you're crazy for noticing what's really happening. That's what's going on. And let me start with the gaslighter in chief himself, Joe Biden. This is Joe Biden giving a speech yesterday. Oh no, this is Joe Biden talking on a radio interview in North Carolina, talking about a bunch of things. Here, let's put cut number five.
Well, I think what's at stake for everyone, and particularly the black voters, is that our very democracy is at stake. When I ran in 2020, and the black community was really significant in my winning in the first place, when I ran in 2020, I said democracy is at stake, and the press said, oh, wait a minute, that's an exaggeration. Except the vast majority of people understood what I meant. For example, making it harder to vote. What do you need to vote? An ID card to be able to go vote, a photograph. You know, this is a once-in-a-generation for us to be able to stand up and take on the extreme division and violence that the MAGA Republicans are pushing.
The extreme division and violence that MAGA Republicans are pushing. Right. I mean, it's, you know, if you ever wanted to sort of underscore the us versus them, it's that statement right there. That's part of the gaslighting. The other part of the gaslighting is, what do you need an ID for? Well, what do you need? What do you need a picture for to vote? Oh, I don't know. Maybe to protect democracy. Again, a form of gaslighting here. But besides the hyperbole here, the blah 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 about. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Democracy was under siege in 2020, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, you're president now. You've had 3 years in office. Very clearly, if democracy is still under siege, you're not doing a great job. But you know it's still under siege because you are doing everything you can to try to undermine it. There's no great conspiracy in the fact that Joe Biden is on an African-American radio show talking about these things the same week that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, was at a predominantly black church also talking about voter ID. What they're trying to do is they are trying to undermine election integrity efforts in advance of the election. It's very clear what they're doing. You know, the Attorney General of Colorado yesterday said that, or the day before yesterday, played the dumb statement, oh, you know, it's now up to the voters to protect democracy. It always is. But you can't protect democracy by voting if a bunch of people can subvert the vote. And not to mention the soft bigotry of low expectations. What do I mean by that? And this is something, guys, that I have hit upon literally for decades. You know, real quick, I'll tell a little story about myself. I grew up in suburban New York. I grew up in a wonderful community called the town of Greenberg. And the town of Greenberg was celebrated because it had a school district that very early on desegregated its schools. And really lived for many, many years on this idea of promoting the idea that people should be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. That's why that sentiment is so important to me. That anybody can achieve. And then in the mid-80s, there was a movement to change the way that the schools challenged its students. And there were, because again, this was at the early edge of this idea of diversity and getting rid of the concept of meritocracy and allowing people to succeed, and that the idea of succeeding was in and of itself was very racist. And I had somebody, another student, say to me very plainly, well, you know, when we go down this road, Andrew, it's just going to be white. This is a woman of color saying this to me, girl of color saying this to me. It's going to be just white Jewish teachers teaching white Jewish students. And I looked at her and I said, well, first of all, you're here. So obviously it's not going to be that way. But how dare you? What kind of a person are you that you're going to sell your people? Not that you should think of them as your people, because we're not monolithic based upon, again, our skin color, our ethnic origin, etc. But how dare you sell your people short over this? The idea that they can't achieve. That's the soft bigotry of low expectations. And that's exactly what the folks who tell you that people of color can't get ideas are guilty of, or that people of color can't go to college. You know, Joanne Reed, they're trying to get rid of black people in college. No, we're not trying to get rid of black people in college. We want to prepare black people for college. We want to, frankly, fix all of those educational systems that have long been in the hands of Democrats for decades, if not generations. And we're producing a permanent underclass of people. You know, when you have schools in Baltimore, which not a single person can pass their math or reading comprehension skills, that's a problem. And getting rid of standardized testing at elite institutions isn't going to help those students. I mean, it really is just an incredibly myopic, bigoted view that they have. We got about a minute here. I want to play this. The president, this is, you're going to hear this in the future, the whole shrinkflation thing. Here is the president once again talking about Cookie Monster. Let's play cut six.
In fact, some of the small snack companies, you won't and think you won't even notice what they're doing. When they charge you just as much for the same size bag of potato chips, only has a hell of a lot fewer chips in it. I'll tell you who did notice, the Cookie Monster. He pointed out his cookies are getting smaller, paying the same price. I was stunned when I found out that's what actually happened.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. You're to blame for it. When you make it more expensive to do things and businesses are reluctant to raise their prices, guess what? That's what's going to happen. I talked about it the other day with regards to sausages. I was making beans and rice. But this is once again a form of gaslighting. Listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking about KJP. She doesn't have anything. We're going to find out what she doesn't have. We're going to be joined by Mel Kay, Andre Yanku, who is a partner with Sullivan and Cromwell. If you want to get a hold of me, @Andrew_Langer on Twitter. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today.